Hey, everybody. Fantastic interview today with Ray Chan, the CEO of 9GAG. We talk about 9GAG as a business. We talk about MemeLand, which is 9GAG's Web3 initiative. And then, of course, we talk about Potatoes and MVPs, which are the two projects in the NFT portion of the business under MemeLand. So Ray is very, very knowledgeable on NFTs. I was surprised at just how much he knows. And I'd say 50% of the conversation is about 9GAG and Potatoes. And the other 50% really is about NFTs in general, what he thinks about the future of digital ownership and blockchain technology and NFTs and everything in between. So it's a great conversation. As always, all of our content is sponsored by FTX. You can sign up at thenifty.com/FTX or with the code thenifty on your FTX mobile app. Hey, everybody. In this video, we are having an interview with the CEO of 9GAG, Ray Chan. We're going to talk about all things 9GAG, MemeLand, and Potatoes. Very, very excited about this interview. As always, nothing in this video is financial advice. We are not financial advisors. The NFT space is incredibly risky, so always make sure that you do your own research. And if you enjoy the content, hit the like button, smash the subscribe button, share it with your friends. It really helps us out. All of our content is sponsored by FTX. You can sign up at thenifty.com/FTX or with the code thenifty on your FTX mobile app. And without any further ado, the man himself, Ray Chan, the CEO of 9GAG. Welcome to the show. How's it going, Ray?
Good. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming. We're honored. And we think that it's going to be a lot of fun. I think a lot of people in the NFT space found out about you and about 9GAG, you know, through the Potatoes NFT drop, the NFT project Potatoes. So obviously we're going to talk about that. But, you know, before we dive in, would you want to share a little bit about, you know, who you are and what 9GAG is in case people might not know?
Yeah. I think for people who don't know 9GAG either, they're too old or they're too young. Yeah, but basically, we started 9GAG like 14 years ago. Yeah, we are based in Hong Kong, but our website, our audience is very global. Right now, we have about 200 million audience across the world, across all the platforms, including our website, our apps, social media, for example, like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok. Yeah, and our mission is pretty simple. Basically, what we want to do is we want to make the world happier. Yeah, that's what 9GAG is. Yeah, so that part is more about our Web2 business. And then right now, starting from this year, we launched a new brand called MemeLand. That is our Web3 business. Yeah.
Well, so 9GAG, I'm familiar with 9GAG because it was on my radar. It looks like around the time that you went full time in 2011, according to Wikipedia. Congratulations on having a Wikipedia page. In terms of around that time, there was 9GAG and Giphy and a couple of other. I mean, there still is Giphy, but there were a couple of places that were sort of. I mean, I guess you have Reddit as well that were aggregating GIFs, and there were various paths with how that went. 9GAG was around at that time. Did you guys raise funding from some investors in Silicon Valley? Because I feel like whatever it was, 9GAG was on my radar for whatever reason. So like, how did that start and what was the focus of that?
Yeah, sure. We started the website in 2008. And then in 2011, we thought, hey, we are building an internet business, right? It's kind of like playing basketball. Basically, you can play basketball anywhere, right? But if you really want to be a good basketball player, you want to play at the top lead, right? It's like the NBA. Yeah. And then at the time, we thought that we knew that Silicon Valley is the NBA. Yeah. That's why we joined a few tech accelerators in the US. The first one we joined was 500 Startups.
Yeah. You were in 500 Startups. They invested in both you and Giphy at that time, I feel like, maybe.
I think the term should be Giphy. Yeah. Giphy, I think they are a little bit younger than us, yeah.
Okay.
But they focus a lot on the GIF and then the search and stuff like that, right? For us, we are more like a place for people to share funny pictures and videos, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then 2011, we joined 500 Startups, and after that, we joined Y Combinator as well, yeah. And then after that, we went back to Hong Kong to continue to building, yeah. And and that's it, yeah. And then we just keep building, yeah.
I think I saw your 500 Startups pitch at Demo Day, actually, which is why this clicked for me. So I think I actually saw it at that point in time. And I'm looking
at the time we were not really building 9GAG. Yeah, because we always thought that, the project is kind of like silly, right? And then it's kind of like useless. Who would kind of like spend time to read funny pictures and stuff, right? And then we can't be more wrong. At the time, we were building online karaoke project. We called it Singboard. And then no one really used the project. And then but tons of people keep using the useless little website called 9GAG. And then that's why after 500 startups, we just stopped Singboard and then pivoted back to 9GAG and keep building on 9GAG.
Awesome. Well, you definitely were way up on my radar and also my automated system back at that time. I had a system tracking all of the startups, so you guys had virality built in. Anyways, we don't need to stick on 9GAG. So you started that in 2011. That's still active today, right? Like, it sounds like this is an expansion. Potatoes, your whole Web3 initiative, everything else is coming directly out of 9GAG. That's still within the 9GAG entity, right?
Yeah, you can say so. I think somehow I feel like, hey, we've been building 9GAG 14 years, right? It's kind of like waiting for the NFT to happen. Yeah, because after working on social media for so many years, right, we see the goods and the bads of our social media, right? And then that's why when we started to understand more about NFT, more about Web3, we feel like, hey, this is kind of like the utopia that we want as a content platform, as a content creator. Yeah, that's why we started to learn more about Web3, and then we started to work on MemeLand. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, Pio, did you want to dive into
MemeLand? Yeah, so if we're diving into MemeLand now, so this is, you know, your Web3 arm of the business, so to speak, and you've put out potatoes. I think the heaviest question on everybody's mind, I think, that everybody's thinking about when they think about MemeLand NFTs is, why potatoes? You know, there's beets, there's carrots, there's plenty of other vegetables, but you pick potatoes. Why potatoes?
There are two meanings behind. Yeah, first of all, it was like a insider joke on 9GAG. Yeah, when people talk about potatoes, on 9GAG, because the design is like a one page, pretty simple one pager. Yeah, for the post page. So if the post is really really long, then suddenly the people will just post another potato photo. Say that, hey, thanks for reading the long post, and then here's a potato. It's kind of like I think the meaning behind is potato is growing under the ground, right? That's why after the very, very long pose, you feel like, hey, you're seeing something under the ground, and I want to give you something kind of like a small gift after you're reading such a long pose. I think this is one of the meaning. Yeah, and the other meaning is because potatoes is a free meme, and then why we launched a free meme, that's another story, right? But we feel like, hey, everyone is kind of like a small potato, right? So if this is a free project, if this is like a lower tier entry into the MemeLand ecosystem, I think potatoes is a good choice of veggie, yeah, to represent what we try to build. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you giving a legitimate answer to my illegitimate question, and it's a great answer. So, you know, the current state of affairs with potatoes is you can grow your potatoes. There was effectively just a reveal, and there's different, you know, stages of potatoes. Could you kind of enlighten people a little bit about, you know, all of those details?
Yeah, sure. I think the gradual reveal is partly planned, partly an accident, right? Somehow, I started to buy NFT in the beginning of this year. Yeah, and then I'm a big believer that, hey, if you really want to learn something, right, you should dive in instead of just, hey, I kind of know how it works, right? That's why I spend tons of personal money, right? And then to buying a lot of expensive JPEGs, yeah. And then after that, I started to understand more about, hey, the community, the so-called Web3 community, right? And then I started to understand, hey, what an NFT community can do. And then what is the so-called a life cycle of an NFT? Of course, NFT is still pretty new, but when you see the project launch, usually, hey, the hype is, most of the hype is before the launch. And then after the launch, right before the reveal, people start to dumb, right? That's why we try to think about, hey, can we try to reverse engineer the whole process to see, to test out, hey, what would be the result if we try to change something, if we try to so-called innovate a little bit. Yeah, we call it a micro innovation internally. Basically, hey, we still do most of projects we do. Yeah, but we try to add some fun experiment into what we try to build. Yeah, so that we can test out the result. And gradual review is a part of the experiment that we are trying right now. Yeah. And then another one is a process that we call growing. It's kind of like a sticking mechanism. Yeah. And then they go hand in hand with the potatoes, because potatoes is a plant. That's why we try to make it grow. And then when you grow, it's kind of like you stick it. Yeah, so that you earn some ticket. And on the other hand, you also gradually review your images. So basically, we prolong the whole review process on one hand. On the other hand, we also give you an incentive so that you stick with us, so that you don't just, hey, because you roll a so-called common potato, and then you just dump it on the floor, right? This is something that we want to try as a project, yeah.
So I understand the dynamics. I own a rainbow potato that I bought for 2 ETH at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't sold it. I'm evolving it right now. My potato does appear to be growing, although I didn't grow it at the right time. I missed it. And so now it's only been growing for 2 days, but I'm trying to evolve it to the next stage. It's only at stage one right now from stage zero. But it's in the process of growing. So I'm interested to see what the outcome is. And primarily if rainbow starts shooting out of the actual backside of the potato, which is what I'm most interested in. But I'm wondering, like, in terms of like project, what's the end goal here? So I'm interacting with it. We've seen some, I mean, there's not a ton of projects that have done this. We've seen games, like I think of Wolf Game was one that attempted to do, you know, keep people engaging with their NFT. There was also, and now we have 10KTF is kind of the primary example that we have where they send people on missions. And it's incredibly challenging to follow along, at least for me, because I just don't spend a bunch of time doing it. The simplicity of this one, I do continue to go and stake this potato. And now this is like top of mind that every day I have to go back and do this damn thing. So what are you thinking over the long term? I mean, this is just the NFT engagement, but it sounds like it's part of some bigger ecosystem. What is that? Like, what is Meme Land? What's the ecosystem that you're building?
Yeah, you mentioned a few points that we consider when we build a whole project for potatoes. Yeah, I think a lot of projects, because the builders, right? Because at the end of the day, NFT is a tech project. That's why most of the builders, they're engineers, right? And for engineers, they see the world in different lens. So basically, hey, I have some cool stuff I want to build out, and then this is fun, this is a good game and stuff like that, right? But in real world, ain't nobody got time for that, right? I think most of the time, hey, when you buy an NFT, you just wait for it. If you are patient enough, hey, you wait for the full price to go up and then maybe you keep it or you sell it, right? But most people, they don't try to get too deep into an ecosystem. Yeah, unless you see it as a so-called play-to-earn games. But after some time, you can see that the play-to-earn hype is kind of like dying down. Yeah, because people feel like, hey, what's the point of earning all those tokens that is not very usable, yeah, in the long run? That's why as a NFT buyer myself or so-called collector myself, and also as a project maker, right, we try to introduce some elements that is simple enough to follow up, that is also engaging enough for you to kind of like participate in the whole ecosystem. So right now, the whole plan for us is there are three projects in the Memeland ecosystem. But that would be just like still the so-called appetizer or the starter for what we try to build. Yeah, at the core mission for Memeland is to create a creator economy on Web3. Yeah, basically, it's like within our circle of competence in the sense that, hey, we try to build social media on Web3, but in a sense that, hey, can the creators have the ownership of what they create? And also, can the fans can invest in the creators that they like instead of just being one of their fans or just an audience, right? That would be like the big, big goal of Memeland. Yeah, but the thing is, hey, if we really want to build that, then we probably need a token. But when you talk about tokens, right, people will think that, hey, if I want to buy a token, but then how technical it is, hey, what is an innovation and stuff like that, right? Then the problem is they will focus on the technical part instead of the application part. That's why we thought, hey, maybe we just don't do the token first. We try to gather a community so that we can educate them, hey, what we are trying to do first. And NFT is a better way to do so. Because at the end of the day, NFT people feel like, hey, I own something, right? And if I earn some tokens after all, then that feels like a bonus. That's why we launched the NFT project. And for the NFT project, we have three projects. We launched one of them. It's called You The Real MVP. Yeah, it's like a very small premium collection. And then right now, we also have a free mint. It's a potato. So it's like a lower entry to the meme ecosystem. And then we'll be launching our main collection. Right now, the name is called The Captains, right? But basically, they serve different ways to into the meme land ecosystem.
And so, first of all, it seems like you have a really sophisticated understanding of the NFT space that probably comes from the Web2 nature of your previous business and like community focus. But then also, like you said, you participated, you actually spent a lot of your own money on NFTs. And I'm assuming you had some things that worked out well and probably some things. Nothing worked out well. Everything went down.
But the thing is, I mean, the whole idea for me to buy NFT is not actually to earn the profit, right? I barely sell, right? That's why I don't really make a profit. Yeah, but the whole thing is when you try to spend your own money and then you will start to care more, right? Yeah. And then when you care more, you participate in the community. For example, I'm quite active in Gutter Cat Gang, Kaiju Kings, and a few other projects, right? And from there, I started to talk to more experienced NFT collectors. And then I try to understand how they see the NFT landscape as well as how they see a good project, right? That's why when we launch the projects, you feel like, hey, it doesn't feel like a very Web2 branding project. Yeah, that's why I think when you mentioned that, hey, where does our learning come from? I don't think the Web2 learning helped that much. Although I think for when I get, it's kind of like almost like 2.5 already, because it's like very community heavy, right? And most of the NFT projects, they focus a lot on the community. So I think that part helps a little bit. But at the end of the day, it's more about, hey, when you lose enough money, right? You started to understand more about the game. Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. Nick, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sort of wondering. So could you take us through like when you first started adding anuses to the potatoes? Now, and that came in and you decided, what was the sort of variety that you had of coming out of the anus? And real quick, how many potatoes have you seen in real life that have a butthole?
The inspiration actually comes from a book called Whatever You Think, Think Opposite. Now, it's a very simple book that I like a lot. Yeah, and then when we tried to work on our NFT project, right, we started with our plants that grows on poop. Yeah, because at the time, until now, yeah, the market is like kind of like shit, right? That's why we follow, hey, maybe we can grow something good out of a poop. That was the inspiration for stage zero. Yeah, and then for stage one, we started to show the butt. Yeah, because I think no NFT project that I have seen so far show the butt as an image asset. That's why we want to try something different, right? That's why we show the butt. And then we started to think that, hey, for stage two, maybe we should show the face, right? But then we thought, hey, maybe we continue to show the butt. Yeah, that's why you see that right now, the stage two on the screen. Yeah, it's like kind of like a tracking butt.
Yeah. So it sounds like you were saying, I appreciate you answering that because that's what a lot of people have been wondering about, is just an infatuation with the anus itself. But I'm wondering, so you were discussing MemeLand kind of as like a platform for creators. Are you viewing it more as a platform versus like a game or something like that? And where do you, like, if there's a category that you put yourself in, which I hate to actually say here because that's an awful, it's kind of an awful quiz. I don't know if it's a good question or not, but if you're thinking categorically, even within the NFT space, you mentioned Gutter Cat Gang, you mentioned some of these other things. What are the areas that you're looking toward for inspiration when you think of, or is it just saying, hey, let's do something completely different?
I think it would be too overconfident to say that, hey, you're building something very different, right? I mean, most of the time, people don't understand when something is totally different. Yeah. So what we are trying to build is indeed it's not very much different from most of the projects. But we try to make sure that, hey, when we do it better. Yeah. And then the ultimate goal, as I mentioned before, is we try to create a creator economy on Web3. So that part is more about the creator. But the beginning is we have to gather a small group of dedicated community to understand, hey, how we try to do so. Because at the end of the day, for any social media platform, right, they have to have users, right? And they have to have an audience. They have to have creators. That's why we started with the community first. Instead of, hey, we just try to launch a token and then just give out the token to creators that they don't really care about your project that much. Yeah, we try to kind of like, you can say, it's like decentralized the social media platform in the sense that, hey, can our initial holders to become kind of like the shareholders or the core members of the community so that, hey, they can help us to get the creators, to invite the creators that they like and stuff like that. That's how we think about the whole process. Yeah.
There's a lot of people right now exploring that area of Web3. Well, I'll just say Web3 basically, where communities, members are stakeholders. And frankly, that's what a lot of NFT projects are at this point in time. But most people won't even acknowledge it, I think, in terms of how they view it. Primarily, I think the biggest concern is sort of as securities. But the area that we have seen, one of the people that speak on our show and has their own show, Node Mode, works at a company that's actually focused on this particular thing, where they're trying to figure out, hey, can we actually, and I spoke with another team as well, can we actually issue securities to our community? Can we give actual stock via these different assets? And we had someone on our show, a sponsor, a couple of weeks ago, who did the exact same thing. So I think that there's a lot of interesting innovations taking place on that front. Would you say, and I want to turn it over to POs, but would you say that when you talk about creator platforms, are the creators that you're thinking about meme creators, or like what type of creators are your target demographic that you're going after?
I think the definition of memes are varies depending on people, right? But when we see memes, basically anything popular, anything viral, basically, they're a meme, right? Even money itself is a meme. Yeah, because at the end of the day, it doesn't really have value, but people kind of like inject our own value in it. And then that's why we share a common value, and that is meme, right? And then that's why I think we call the project Memeland. It's because on one hand, when people think about NightGag, they think about memes. Yeah. On the other hand, it's because meme is kind of like really, really getting mainstream in Web3. Yeah, that's why we picked the term Memeland. But when we are thinking about creators, you don't have to be a so-called meme creator. You can be any kind of creators, yeah. Because at the end of the day, if the creator economy works, right, why do we only focusing on just meme creators? Yeah, it can be any type of creators that is creating interesting content for their audience, yeah.
So basically a Web3 content platform would be the idea.
You can say so, but I would... That's why I think back to Nick's question is... I think I would categorize Memeland is more like a SocialFi, that kind of project, instead of a game. Because, I mean, I'm not a big gamer. I like to play games, but not spend tons of time in playing games. And I think for most people in Web3, gamer is like a small subset of the people in Web3. Yeah, and then most of the games are in Web3, no offense, but they suck. Yeah, that's why people don't play the game for the game. They only play the game for the game, right? And then for that game, when it doesn't really work anymore, right? Then they just dump the game and then move on to the next game. Yeah, that's why most of the pay-to-earn game doesn't work. That's the main reason, right? It's not because the system doesn't work. It's because the game doesn't work. But for us, what we try to think about is, as I mentioned, right? I'm a big believer in the circle of competence, yeah. That's why we try to... focus on the social media, focus on the creator side of the things, because that's what we have been doing for over a decade. Yeah, and that part is something that we try to work on. So I think the fun little review mechanism or the growing and prize draw mechanism is more like, hey, we try to make some fun bonus, fun elements into the project so that we can get people engaged. Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's more about, hey, can we just focusing on the activity that most people like, which is like following content, reading content, and then following the creators, yeah.
Where did all of the demand for this product come from, like at the beginning? Because you were saying something before we hopped on air, and I'm wondering, you know, what your existing audience distribution looks like for 9GAG and how that's converted over to the Web3 side, or if it hasn't at all. How do you see these? Are these similar circles or like audiences? Or are they completely different audiences, and you just have you've attracted a completely different group with MemeLand?
I think when people, indeed, it goes back to the question. Hey, a lot of people in Web3, they try to categorize. Hey, Web2 versus Web3, right? And then it feels like they live in two worlds. But at the end of the day, it's just human beings, right? Yep. Spending time on the internet. Yeah. So basically, what Web2 and Web3 are competing for the same type of audience, same type of resources. It's just some of the audience, they started to get into the Web3 ecosystem earlier. But at the end of the day, just like how people shift from watching TV, listening to radio, and then start to use internet, right? I would say that it's probably more and more people will get into the Web3, because Web3, at the end of the day, I think the navigation experience may be a little bit different, right? But the key difference is the ownership, the decentralization, right? Those are the things that people like about Web3, and those are the things that has the potential to disrupt all the big player in the current market. And that's why I think when we think about the audience and when we think about the creators, it's not just, hey, a very small set of creators that only create content for Web3, for example, like, K-Money, right? Yeah, his content is funny, right? It's all about crypto, all about NFT. But when you look at a bigger creator space, K-Money is popular in his own circle, right? But there are tons of creators in different circles. And I think those are the creators that we also want to attract, yeah. But the challenge is, how can we onboard them, right? Then that go back to the origin of social media, in the sense that when we feel like, hey, no projects can disrupt my space, and then Facebook comes, right? And then no projects can disrupt Facebook, and then Instagram comes, right? And then Snapchat and TikTok, right? When we look at each platform, you can see that the first type of creators that join the new platform, they are very different from the existing type of creators, yeah. But ultimately, all the creators, they kind of like converge in all the platform. That's why what we try to do is, can we attract creators that, sorry, yeah, it's like the baby cam. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What we can attract is, can we attract the creators that are not extremely big on current social media platform, but they have a good understanding of Web3, then we onboard them first. And then when they see that, hey, this platform, they have a better control, they have a better return, they have a better fans, right? Then I would suggest that more and more creators will try to will get on board. Yeah, that is our plan. Yeah.
You want to go?
Well, no, Nick, you're on a roll. You can get. I'm ready whenever, but I want you to keep going if you're inspired.
Well, the last question associated with that is, so let's say, what's the compelling reason that's going to drive creators? Is this a new platform, a completely fresh platform? Are you delivering some of the existing 9GAG audience? What makes a creator, for myself, you know, as one of the greatest creators in existence that as many people have now come to recognize, why would I go on to, I say that jokingly, but why would I go on to MemeLand?
Oh, basically, it's because your fans are on MemeLand. That's why you have to go there. Because creators, I mean, most people feel like, hey, you have the creators first, and then you have fans, right? But the fact is, it's not really like that. The biggest platform, they attract more fans. And also the platform, even if they are not the biggest, right? But when they can create the biggest return for the creators, they also attract a lot of creators. For example, OnlyFans, right? Yeah, they attract a lot of creators because creators can really make a living there, whatever content that they share, right? But somehow they make money there, right? That's why people go there. And I think that, hey, can we kind of like replicate a similar model, right? But maybe the content itself is not focusing on adult content. But yeah, when we think about OnlyFans, the good thing about OnlyFans or Patreon is you don't really have to have any ads and stuff like that, right? You just, maybe you have ads, but not advertising, right? Yeah, but somehow the thing is, the creators, they actually find their fans who are willing to pay for their content. Yeah. And that part is like it's kind of like so basic, right? It's like back to the original. Hey, you buy, I sell, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I think it's just like for Web2 social media, we are so used to free content. That's why most of the creators can't really make a living, right? That's why your show has to be sponsored by FTX, right? Yeah, because people don't really want to pay. Yeah, if you want to ask them to pay for like $5 or $10, right? They don't even want to pay. Yeah, that's why most of the Patreon creators, they don't really make a huge return. Yeah, that's why most of the big creators, they stay on YouTube because YouTube sponsorship and stuff like that, they make more money, right? But I truly believe that with blockchain, with Web3, with NFT, I think the game can be changed. Yeah.
It's almost like a return, like you were alluding to the old world. Like in the old world, you know, you had a service, another person paid you for that service. There was an exchange. Then we got like, you know, post-industrial revolution where you kind of had the factory system come into play and distribution and everything like that. And then now it's almost like you go back to that through decentralization. You know, because you have such an understanding of Web3, at least it seems to me, I'd be curious, you know, you mentioned that Potatoes is the second collection. There's going to be a third collection. How much do you think about supply of NFT assets?
Oh, you mean in the MemeLand ecosystem?
In the MemeLand ecosystem and in general, because we have seen some NFT businesses inflate supply and having that have a negative impact. Then we've also seen other businesses decrease supply and see that have a positive impact. And a lot of people have different opinions on the level of importance and focus that should be put on this. I'd be very curious to hear how you think about it.
I think if you are talking about the collections that we are launching, right?
Yeah.
For our MVP, we have a 420. Yeah, it's a 420 collection.
Yep.
For Potatoes, it's like a 10K. It's like 9999 collection, right? And then for our main collection, it's also a 9999 collection. Yeah. The main reason why we have Potatoes and also why we have the main collection is, I mean, Potatoes is kind of like a random idea that we have. We didn't really plan it, but the market is so bad, right? And then we haven't really finished our main collection. That's why we thought, hey, maybe we have to launch something to keep up the hype. And then what is better than launching a collection than keeping up the hype, right? That's why we launched Potatoes. It's kind of like suddenly a new guy comes in town and then we just, hey, push the new guy first, yeah. And then it's like when the meta change, we kind of like to follow. I think this is the good and bad of Web3. Because somehow, hey, if you move fast enough, you can adapt to the market, right? But somehow, if you move very slowly, right, you work on it, but before you launch the market, the meta has already changed, right? And then, but for the main collection, we always try to keep it like around 10K to 20K, because I think when you, of course, they are not actually shares, right? They are not actually securities. But when you think about a core community, yeah, if you have like, 10K to 20K core members of a community is already very huge, right? And those are the guys who are willing to pay like a few ETH to support your project. Yeah, I think that part is good enough for any so-called big empire, right? When you look at Facebook, I don't think they have that many angel investors when they launch, right? Of course, right now they have a lot of shareholders, right?
Right.
But when you think about the core member as kind of like a so-called investor, right? In that sense, yeah, yeah. Then 20, I think is more than enough, yeah. But when you talk about NFT itself, I think every content should be or can be an NFT. Because at the end of the day, it's more about, hey, the digital ownership, right? Yeah, but the challenge for the so-called normies is, yeah, bless you. For the
so-called
normies, yeah. Oh, it's so difficult to buy an NFT. Yeah, I don't know the security, right? I have to open MetaMask and then buy Ethereum and stuff like that. It's so challenging for them. That's why I think on one hand, the big hurdle is how can we make every creator content a piece of NFT? On the other hand is how can we onboard a lot of people that they can own part of the content without knowing all the NFT stuff like that, right? Yeah, so I think there's a lot of work to be done, but that would be the direction.
Interesting. Okay, well, would that be using a different blockchain or being the custody of those NFTs or not even using NFTs?
I have a question then, like Nick, and it's based off what I think the direction you're going in, Nick, is Ray, do you feel as though blockchain technology truly is like the next iteration of the internet in the sense that it's like, it's the technology so superior that inevitably over time,
that wasn't where I was going.
Okay. Months, years, half a decade, decade, it'll just penetrate everything just like the internet did. Just like, you know, I don't go through a travel agent to book a trip and I just book a flight online and nobody asks me when I tell them, oh yeah, I booked a flight to London. No one says, oh, did you book it on the internet? Everyone just assumes. Is that the direction we're going in with the blockchain?
I mean, I'm more like a realist in a sense. I'm not somehow when I see people say in their title, like futurist, right? I kind of laugh most of the time. Yeah, but I think, for example, like my dad, right now he still doesn't use any internet. He get his news from radio and also from newspaper, right? He's like an old school guy. Yeah. The thing is, I think internet always has its own usage, right? And most of the time, you don't really need something on blockchain to prove that you own it, right? At the end of the day, hey, if you just consume a piece of content, you don't care where it is, right? Whether it's like you download it, you stream it, or you see it on the internet, it doesn't really matter. Yeah. But I think for some of the element, right, you want to prove your ownership, then blockchain itself definitely has a very superior, I would say, usage than traditional internet. Yeah. I think what we are imagining will be, for example, when I mention a creator, for example, like Nick, right? Hey, you are a creator. And then maybe if you do it on OnlyFans, right, then you set up a paywall and then you kind of like limit your distribution. And if you do it on Instagram or on YouTube, right, you barely make any money, right? And then how to find the balance? I think maybe NFT is one of the solutions, yeah. So what we can imagine is, hey, as a creator, you continue to publish your content for free, yeah, but maybe you have like 10 or 5 limited edition that your super fans can buy, right? And then they can own it. And then they kind of like become your early supporters or investors, right? So when you get even more famous, then they can show to their friends and prove that, hey, I'm an early supporter because of the blockchain has shown that, hey, I was like the first like 10 supporters, right, of your show, right? And then on one hand, you have the rights to flex. On the other hand, maybe that is something valuable in the long run, right? Imagine you own the first demo of Justin Bieber, right? That should be worth something, right? Imagine you own something really like the first edition of something, right? Probably that should also be worth something. I think with a mixture of NFT and just content itself, I think that can create a new way of monetization for creators, yeah. And also because for blockchain, it's so easy to see, hey, who pay you, right? So that you can, as a creator, you can easily to create so-called more utility for your super fans. Right? Imagine when you can look at the Nifty show and then you see, hey, who are the members who buy your NFT? You can easily offer more stuff to them, right? And then they are happier. And then they will also continue to support you more. Those are the things that can be enabled by NFT, but not that easily enabled by the traditional internet. Just like Patreon, right? You support a creator, but you can't really transfer your membership. And even if the creator get more famous, right? So what? You don't really earn something. You're always just a customer. But when there's an NFT in the picture, somehow you can be an investor. Yeah. Although not financial advice, right? But somehow I think that changes the game. And that's why a lot of people are willing to spend so much more money in an NFT than just a picture. It's because they feel like they're doing an investment instead of just a consumption. Yeah.
Well, we have extensive conversations about this exact subject matter and how the NFT factors into every different type of business, especially media businesses, as well as what you're talking about, creators. I mean, there's a fine line between a quote media business and a creator. I'm not sure if there actually even is a line between those two separate things outside of the way that it's structured. But we all have access to the exact same tools and the same distribution channels to go and produce content. And the cost of producing it is effectively zero. So the totally unrelated question that I was wondering about, which is How large is the 9GAG team today? How many people are on meme land? And so is this, that I'll actually just stop there.
For 9GAG, we have about 40 to 50 people in our team. Yeah. And then among the 40 to 50 people, we have about six to eight full-time on meme land. Yeah. And then we are also actively hiring. Yeah. Somehow I think that goes back to the question, hey, should we convert some people from Web 2 to Web 3, right? I think even within our own company, we feel like this is like mission impossible. Yeah, because for example, we give free airdrop, NFT airdrop to our team. We teach them how to use, how to buy NFT and stuff like that. Most people, they don't care until one of our NFT becomes like the floor price is like 30 ETH, right? Then they started to ask more questions, right? I think that's why the proposition that, hey, you have to educate people more about Web 2 and Web 3, stuff like that. I think that's like a wrong proposition, right? When this shit makes money, right? People will start to work on it. Yeah, I believe that's the direction. Yeah.
It's so crazy. I just had a phone call with we'll call him a Web 2 friend, basically a normal friend who's a lawyer. And I was chatting with him and he was asking about my NFT and he was saying, should I be selling this thing? And I was like, hold up, man. I've known this guy for years, over 20 years at this point in time. I went to college with him. And I'm like, how much money did you put into our NFT? Like $1,600 or something like that? You make, what, $500,000 a year as a lawyer? Why does it matter? Why not wait for the thing to go up 10x or see if we can even do that together? I'll give you $1,600 and then and see if you can turn that into something something more. It's hilarious though the impact that just a floor price has on things, and that's still really the stage that we're at with a lot of these different things. I mean, the same thing happened to the art market, frankly. It wasn't a speculative, volatile market the way that it has become over time, where you have a lot of this secondary action. It grew over time, especially with modern art. I'd say that's the thing that really transformed things in the entire art market was the sheer volume of it. And now we're seeing the exact same thing. And what's interesting here, though, is what we're building is, and you mentioned this essentially, which is not what most people are thinking about. When people launched NFTs before, they were thinking, I'm going to sell this thing so I can go and build a business. But it more like Kickstarter. But what we're actually seeing now is people who are habitually buying NFTs, myself included. You know, we're doing it for maybe speculative purposes oftentimes, but sometimes in that process, I buy one that I'm like, oh, that one's cool. I'll just hold on to that basically. And so now there's this behavior that exists for a lot of these different people. So you said something there about, what the business model is there and issuing other NFTs and selling those to customers. So I'm sort of wondering, you're building out this platform. Where does that fall into the grand scheme of things? Because it sounds like what you're saying is, hey, creators, come here and use our platform to essentially leverage the power of NFTs to basically monetize your avid following, essentially. And we're going to build a platform along those lines that make it incredibly easy to do so, even for your customers that don't understand how to use MetaMask and all these other different things. So let me summarize my question into a single sentence after I went on a rambling, exhaustive thing there. The first is that really a high priority, is making this accessible for non-crypto people to buy NFTs, is the first question. And is the entire business model here essentially creating a habit of people buying NFTs? Is that what you're seeing as the future, is that everyone's going to be just buying these?
I think the future is everyone will be buying digital asset, right? Maybe it's not NFT. Yeah, at the end of the day, It doesn't have to be an NFT to be a digital asset, right? It's kind of like a sneaker, right? If Nike issue it, and then even if it is not on blockchain, but Nike said that this is true, this is like authentic sneakers, right? Then you still pay high money for it, right? So I think at the end of the day, what the past 1 to 2 years of NFT so-called bull run has proven that people love to spend money to buy expensive JPEGs, yeah. And sometimes it's not, sometimes we kind of like tell ourselves that, hey, I buy it for the art, sometimes I buy it for the culture, sometimes, hey, because even if I hold a big bet, right, but I like the community so much, that's why I keep buying, right? It's kind of like Stockholm syndrome in that sense, but somehow you kind of love it, yeah. And it's so easy, right? Because once you master the art of MetaMask, you just keep buying, right? And so easy, right? Unlike, hey, if you want to buy a Porsche or if you want to buy sneakers, right? You have to wait for a few days, right? For NFT, you buy it, you see it already. Yeah, that kind of instant gratification, right? Those are the things that kind of like feed the needs of human being. That's why more and more people are willing to spend money to buy digital asset. That's why I think the big thing is not really about NFT. The big thing is about digital ownership, yeah. NFT is like, it's more like a common protocol that, hey, no matter which project you are, you can still buy it in a public place, in a public marketplace. I think that is the future direction of digital ownership. And I believe that if the definition is that, then I believe that everyone will be buying digital asset. Yeah, even like today, right, people are buying all kind of asset already. Yeah, on one hand, they buy it for speculation purpose or for investment purpose. On the other hand, it's because I just like it, right? When we look back in history, right? Comic books and then baseball cards, right? Those are the things that a lot of people would buy and they have huge market already. Right now, when the new age of, when the new generation, always they were born on the internet already, then it feels supernatural for them to just collect some digital baseball card, digital comic books, right? And stuff like that. Yeah, I think that would be kind of like unavoidable. Yeah, I don't see that's going back. Yeah, maybe the term is not NFT. Maybe there's a new term. But at the end of the day, it's like digital stuff and people are willing to spend actual money, right? Whatever it is, to buy it. Yeah, I think that is, I would say 100% it will happen.
What, one quick question on that, and then we'll move on and basically be on the home stretch here. So you're saying you're not thinking so much about it as NFTs, but rather digital assets, which I think is totally fair. But then when I hear that, I'm like, but why wouldn't, like, as this blockchain technology evolves, why wouldn't you sort of like certify that digital asset with blockchain technology? Do you know why, like what I'm saying, and like why my mind immediately goes there? Like, in theory, wouldn't it make the most sense to have any digital asset blockchainified, if you will, because of that scarce digital ownership and that kind of confirmation?
I think the question is the same for, hey, when everyone can read the ebook, right? How come there are still physical books, right? Mm-hmm. People just love physical books, right? Mm. And sometimes they just try to save a few dollars gas fee. That's why they try not to mint it. And then on Ethereum, right? I think there are all kind of reasons. Yeah, and I think friction of doing that may be still part of it. Because if you still try to mint it on blockchain, if I mean, all of us here, right, have experience, try to mint a project and then the gas doesn't go through. And then even just like the Utes project, right? A lot of people are complaining these days that, hey, the Solana NFT minting experience sucks, right? And then those are the things that still happen, right? No matter how sophisticated the technology goes, right? So I think until that problem is solved, I think there will still be people who just, hey, as long as I keep the digital asset, it's fine, right? If I want to trade it, maybe if the platform is big enough, I can just trade on the platform already. Yeah, but if it is something that I want to trade with a bigger audience, with a bigger demand, then maybe I put it on blockchain and then I trade it. Yeah, so I think those are the things that is pretty possible. So I'm not like a blockchain maximalist in the sense that, hey, you maxis in the sense that, hey, you have to be on blockchain to be digital asset. I think that would be kind of like silly, right? I think anything that is, when you turn off the power, you can't see it, right? That's basically digital asset. Yeah, and I think a lot of people are willing to spend money on that. Yeah, and I think that will be a much, much bigger market than just the so-called strict definition of NFT. Yeah.
There you have it. So I think we want to do some rapid fire questions to wrap. Unless, Nick, did you have one other thing to throw in on that? Or
no.
All right. So some rapid fire questions. Some stuff from the audience is people are asking about, Meme, the token here.
What is that token?
Oh, the meme? Yeah, the meme coin, right?
Yeah.
Basically, it's we want it to be the default currency for creator economy on Web3. Yeah. It will be related to potatoes. It will also be related to the main collections that we will be launching. Yeah. So basically, by holding these two collections, you have a chance to earn those to earn the meme token. Yeah. I think basically what we try to do is just remove all those technical namings like miners and proof of stake or proof of work, right? Basically, hey, you own the NFT, you prove that you are the core community, right? And then we give back to you, in a meme coin format, yeah. And then you can use the meme coin to support the creator that you like, yeah. And then that would be the direction that we want meme coin to be, yeah. Because I think at the end of the day, when we talk about cryptocurrency, people focus a lot on the technical advancement, right? And whether this is like private, whether this is like faster, whether this is like more secure, right? But I think the main point of currency is whether there's usage, whether there's application, right? And I think that when you look at all the internet, other than e-commerce, right, people spend the most money on virtual asset. They send you a Lamborghini, right, on Twitch, right? They send you a virtual flower on all those streaming platforms. And I think with the meme coin as a token, right, I think we can kind of like make it even easier and have a bigger adoption. And I think that would be the main area that we want meme coin to focus on. Yeah, because at the end of the day, if we try to disrupt the finance industry, right, the banks will not be happy, the government will not be happy, right? But if we say that, hey, we just want to support the creators, right, no matter you just create more content, right? As long as the content is not against the government, I don't think most governments we would care that much, right? Even when you look at China, yeah, or maybe other countries, right? Yeah, the streaming business is huge, right? The creator business is huge. The government doesn't really care that much, yeah. But if you touch on the finance industry, right, they care a lot because it kind of like will shaken their power. So I think for MemeCon for us is focusing on the creator economy. Yeah, that would be the what we want to do. Yeah.
One other question that I saw in the comments was pertaining to the NFT itself. You're mentioning another drop. Is there anything, do potatoes holders get any sort of perks associated with that next drop?
Yeah. One of the allow list mechanism, right? We call it meme list. It's heavily leaning towards the potatoes holders, yeah. And I think that part is pretty straightforward, right? When we launch our collection, we want the collections to go into the hands of the true believers, right? And the real supporters, right? You don't just want someone. I mean, it's all right to flip for profit, right? But as a project owner, right, you don't want people to flip for profit because in that sense, you will kind of like make the whole focus on the price instead of the value that it is creating, right? Yeah. On one hand, we don't promote sell shaming, right? On the other hand, we also want to promote loyalty and patience, yeah, and trust, yeah. And that's why we will continue to give more value to the potatoes holder, right? Nick, you mentioned that you have a potatoes, right? After you grow it, every 7 days you will earn a ticket, right? And then for that ticket, you can join our weekly prize draw, right? We run two prize draw already. The first week we give away, we give out NFT prizes that is worth 90 ETH. And then last week we give out NFT prizes that is worth like 105 ETH, right? I think those are the things that is actually we giving out the value, right? And because as a collector, right, I feel like, hey, the point that you asked me to stake, it seems like you only want to decrease the supply, right? So that you pump up the price. But as a holder, what do I get, right? Some merch and stuff like that, or some useless token, right? That's not something that we want. That's why we try to create a value, even for a free mean project like potatoes, yeah. So there are actually people winning like 30 ETH worth of NFT every week. And also we will be adding like 10 iPhone 14 next week. And then we'll be adding like you can have a free McDonald's meals for a year right, in the fourth draw. We will pick two winners for that. And then hopefully we can work with the winner, right, so that we can create content for that winner as well, to do it in like a Mr. Beast style, like you give free meals to the people in need, right? Those are the things that we try to leverage our business connection, leverage our business experience in Web2, and then put it into Web3. Because at the end of the day, right now, a lot of Web3 projects, they focus a lot on the marketing only. They don't really focusing on the product itself. Yeah, that's something that we hope we can bring in with our experience. Yeah.
Well, the last thing I was going to ask is what's next for potatoes, but it sounds like you just spilled the potatoes on some of the prizes that are going to get dished out. Ray, this was fantastic, man. Awesome talking to you. I feel like we could talk to you all day, but we'll let you go now. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you follow Ray on Twitter at 9GagCEO. The collections are MVPs, which is pulled up right here. That's run up a little bit. It's not exactly cheap right now. But then potatoes, that's the kind of lower cost entry into the ecosystem. Sounds like there's a lot more to come with 9GAG and Meme Land. Nick, go ahead.
I like how you said follow 9GAG CEO. You know, it's more like, yo, shout out to all 9GAG CEO's followers. If you can give us a follow, that would be really appreciated because we could always use more of them. So thank you for that.
And thank you, Ray. Seriously, great time talking to you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah. Catch you guys next time.